This is Too Political, the podcast in which two old friends talk about politics, the news, and whatever else we think of. My name's Arthur.
And this is Jason.
And together we're
Too Political.
Hi again, everybody, and welcome to Too Political, Episode 3, for March 25th, 2009. And joining me again, of course, today is my co-host, Jason. Hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello from Washington, D.C.
And how are things in the nation's capital?
Well, we're spending money right and left.
You don't say.
Yep, I think they're printing hundreds in my basement now. It was 20s earlier, but Tim's going to call me tomorrow. You know, and probably later in the day, I might have to put him off because I'm going to go out to dinner. But Tim's going to call me, and I'm going to go, "Oh, yo, Tim, yeah, okay, hundreds, good. Bring the plates over the weekend." So.
Okay, then.
Well, now, it's always good to have a fantasy.
It is, it is.
I mean, I am living in Washington, D.C., so, I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Fantasy land.
So, yes, so we have our two important dates for everyone out there, as I promised I would give to you. These are sort of more serious dates.
Ooh.
Yes, ooh. So, March 24th is and this is hard to believe, the 20th anniversary of the Exxon Valdez oil spill.
Good grief.
March 24th, 1989.
Jeez.
Wow.
In some ways it seems longer, but I think maybe that's because there was just that recent big oil spill in Australia, so it makes it seem further away. I don't know.
Well, also, like, in the not-too-distant past, there was the court decision about overturning the that was like in the last year, wasn't it? So anyway, 11,000 square miles.
Bloody
or
yeah.
For you people in the metric system, at 28,000 kilometers, km?
Yeah, it's kilometers.
Okay. And on a more joyous and uplifting note, yeah, I think this is a joyous and uplifting note, we want to wish everybody on March 25th, hello and happy Independence Day to all our listeners in Greece. March 25th.
Of which there are many.
I know. A cast of thousands.
Or thousands in a cast, as the case may be. We'll see.
I think that would be extremely uncomfortable. Imagine how itchy that would be.
I was thinking more like a theatrical cast, personally, but if that works for you, go with it.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Well, anyway. On to more mundane things. I think you have topics.
Well, yes, I do, as a matter of fact. Thank you for knowing that.
I know. I always try to be helpful. You know me.
Yes. Well, actually,
I learned it from my father.
Before we actually get into the main topics today, I want to make sure I don't forget to mention that Too Political now has its own voice comment line, which is 206-426-0527. Good God, there's a lot of... Oh, no, there's not that many sixes. Anyway, that's the new number, and we'll repeat that at some stage, I'm sure.
Why can't we have 666? That would be so much more... never mind.
It's assigned at random, I assure you.
Oh, okay.
Well, one of the big topics continues to be the never-ending story of AIG, which the story that just doesn't seem to want to go away.
Have they been in the news lately? I hadn't heard.
Just a little bit. But, of course... so far, about $50 million in the bonuses has been given back, which is nice. And I was hearing just today on ABC News, because we're recording a day in advance, that the 90% tax on the bonuses appears to be dead, which I personally think is a good thing.
Yeah, I would have to agree as well.
What concerns me about it, I mean, a lot of people have talked about it being an ex post facto law, and it's not, because that only refers to criminal cases.
I didn't realize that.
It might be a bill of attainder, but I'm not even so sure about that. But even that's all, for me, that's all even beside the point. I don't like the idea of Congress singling out anybody for special attention, shall we say, because if they could get away with doing that to AIG executives, they could do it to anybody. Imagine, say, in the Bush administration, what they would have done with that kind of power.
This is the angry mob.
Yeah.
I mean, this is really sort of the modern version of the angry mob. There just weren't people with torches and pitchforks. And
despite what Rush Limbaugh says.
Well, yeah.
Boss Limbaugh.
Yeah, whatever.
But there, you know, it was actually kind of close to that when people took buses out to the executives' homes to protest outside their homes. I'm not sure that that was a very good thing to be doing, personally.
Well, I think you could protest at their offices. I think that would be appropriate.
That's legitimate.
There are a couple of issues that just strike me about this thing, and we've discussed this before. This as I often like to do, I sort of like to take the step back and sort of look at it, sort of removed from sort of some of the emotional, you know, let's be lobbing rotten eggs and stones at these people. But how in AIG there was no one who said we are going to be vilified for this, that no one came along and said, I mean, having read sort of what this stuff is about, which I think the news media did a really poor job of explaining, that in some cases people didn't receive a salary, they received this type of compensation, which seems to me stupid and weird and bizarre, but that's the arcane ways of this industry. But that no one didn't say, you know, what we need to do is we need to wait 6 months when we can say, hey, we're done.
Yeah.
Or the year, and then you'll get this. That no one there could have real. It just seems like there was an article in the Post that actually talked with people in the company, and they sort of said, "Well, we sort of feel like we've been thrown underneath the bus, and we've been vilified, and we've been scapegoated." And it's like, and you didn't think this was going to happen? You didn't think people were going to be pissed off?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, let's think about this. You work for AIG. You work for a company that helped to bring about the financial. Almost brought about the financial collapse of not a town, not a city, not a county, not a state, not a country, the whole fucking world.
Yeah.
And you think, well, la-di-da, here's some money to the exact division of the company that brought this about. Yeah. And you think people aren't going to be a little annoyed?
Well, the crowd that was in charge of that didn't have much sense anyway. They were doing things like having golf outings and all kinds of other things, when it was clearly a bad public relations move, if nothing else.
Right.
I think what is at the heart of that, and it's probably actually at the heart of a lot of the problems on Wall Street, is a kind of arrogance that comes with their position, where they think that they know what's best, not just that they know what's best, but they can do whatever they want. And they don't. I think. I honestly do think that most of them don't actually break the law so much as they bend it. but they definitely think that they can get away with doing whatever it is they want to do. And up until now, they have.
And it's sort of this notion of they make money. Obviously, not the old-fashioned way anymore. But that. I almost think there's this notion of there's going to be trillions of dollars to save their collective behinds, something which they've shown, like, yeah, you owe this to us, almost attitude. And then they expect to go back and get their seven-figure bonuses. And I don't see there's got to be something done about that so that does not happen. I don't know how you do that, but there's got to be something written into laws that, you know, or – I guess these were privately owned companies. What the hell happened with the board of directors? You know,
well, many of them were in on it.
Well, yeah, that's sort of the you know, my reaction. Like there was nobody there who could tell that there would be this type of reaction. The guy who is now in charge of it, I think his name's Edward Liddy. At first, I thought, well, what an idiot. But then having sort of what he put forth and what sort of their rationale and their justification, it does make a certain amount of sense. I can see how you want to retain some of these people. And, you know, when I found out, you know, the guy came out of retirement to do this. And I'm thinking, okay, has he done a perfect job? No. This was a problem, but he's reduced. I think there's they've gotten rid of $1.1 trillion worth of, the most toxic assets, which is mind-boggling to me. And the even more mind-boggling number is that they're 1.6 trillion to go. So it's like, you know, this was going to be a thankless job. He obviously
no matter what.
Knew this. He knew that this was going to be a thankless job. He could have just as easily said, "You know what? I'm going to go play golf."
Yeah.
Or I'm going to play canasta, or I'm going to lie on the beach. So he didn't. So I give, you know, was it perfect? No, but I also think this is, you know, a lot of hindsight, and a lot of people say, well, they should have done something about this. Well, this was entered into; these things were entered into even before he came along.
Yeah.
And so, what are you expected to do? The rule of law thing, I think, is a little. If we just go around breaking contracts, hell, we do it all the time.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And that's actually a point that has annoyed me about this whole debate. The people are treating these contracts as if they're holy, as if, you know, they were engraved in stone by some divine being. They're pieces of paper, and you can always break contracts. There's always a way to do it, and I'm sure there is in that as well. But what annoyed me about it is, why are these contracts so holy, so inviolable, and yet auto workers' contracts can be shredded at will? Why are working people at risk and rich people are okay?
I have an even better example. I thought the juxtaposition of this was quite interesting because the AIG hysteria sort of drowned this out, was that the Army is now going to finally get rid of the stop-loss stuff.
Yeah.
Which is, that would be a violation of a contract. Hey, I've entered into this agreement. Granted, it's the language is sort of there, but it's sort of not really. They are allowed to do this, and it's set there. But, I mean, when you sign up for a certain amount of time, that's, I'm assuming, what you expect it to be. And it's kind of unfair to say, oh, no, stay a little while longer.
Yeah.
Go to Iraq another time. Yeah. So,
or three or four.
And, of course, the sort of the main difference between AIG and the auto companies is that the government has said, well, you know, we might let the auto companies fail. That's where I think some of this arrogance comes from. And the too big to fail mantra, which, as we sort of discussed before, is something that must be addressed. This can never happen again.
Well,
these things to be so huge that, we can't allow them to fail. It's like, well, then you know what? The government has failed in regulating.
Well, I would think that one of the ways through this would be to ensure that there's adequate regulation, that a company never gets into this position again. And there also has to be congressional oversight as well. You can't rely on either the executive branch or the legislative branch. They both have to be doing their jobs for change. And
are you trying to imply that Congress and the Republicans didn't do their job?
I most certainly am.
I'm shocked. I'm glad I'm sitting down, because I would fall down.
But I do think, you know, I really do think that that's a way forward. But there has to be a cultural reform on Wall Street where these people get over the sense of entitlement and understand that their interests are not what's important. What's important is that the company's interests are what's important, because there's a lot of shareholders who are behind that. And then in the case of a big company like AIG, what they do has profound implications for everybody else, even people who have nothing to do with them.
Well, what was interesting is, and this was even before this happened, I remember reading this article about how people were making all this amount of money. And I don't remember who it was by, but what was interesting is he said, these people produce nothing.
Yeah.
When you really think about it, what they do is they bundle things and say, this has value.
Yeah.
And he was sort of implying about the notion of a bubble in general. And he brought up the tulip bulbs in the Netherlands in, I guess, the middle 1500s. And that just, you know, and at least they were producing a thing there. But the notion of, and all of a sudden people said, well, why are these things worth all this money?
Yeah. Well, that's exactly right. Things are only have value because we agree they do. Diamonds are only valuable because we say they are. They're really just pretty rocks. Gold is just a shiny metal. All of these things only have value because we say they do.
Right.
Certain things probably have value because of their scarcity, like petroleum, which we're so dependent on. But, I mean, by and large, even a product you buy in the store, The number of times I think to myself how odd it is when somebody says, oh, I got a really good deal at the store. Did you now? Yes, it was marked down 50%. Okay, so was the price you paid a good price then? Yeah. Well, would you have paid the higher price? Well, no. Well, that's not that great a deal, is it? See what I mean?
Right.
That
yeah.
value is a relative term, and worth is a relative term. And I don't know. I think we've got to have a maybe a different perspective on those sorts of things.
Well, there has to be a big cultural change, and I think going forward, you have to do something about the bonuses. I understand why people are so ticked off about it, because it's very interesting to me. It's like people can say, well, you know, we're spending all these billions of dollars or trillions of dollars, and it's just only this amount of money. It's just, you know, I think people have more or less resigned themselves to the fact that we're going to have to spend this money to get this right. They're not happy with it, but it's like, okay. I think what they object to, and again, I don't think this was particularly well explained by the certainly by AIG, and certainly not by the news media, is that they look at this as rewarding failure.
Yeah.
The people who got us into this mess are long gone. These are people who are getting us out of it, which was really very poorly put forth by AIG and really badly reported by the mainstream media.
Yeah.
Sort of like Barry does, like finally sort of like on day five of this, when there was sort of like, you know, the roar was beginning to die down. Did you finally read, oh, these are the people who are getting rid of the assets. Maybe we should think about them slightly differently.
Yeah.
But that was way, way late. But it's this notion of, and it's not even failure. It's some comedian was like, they weren't running the companies into the ground. They were digging a hole and running them into the hole.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to crash and burn when, you know, it's sort of like, okay, we tried and it didn't work. It's another thing to just, you know, the repercussions being so great and just so massive. The other thing is that, like, oh, nobody knew. Oh, nobody knew. Oh, nobody knew. Well, these things were filed by the Security and Exchange Commission, and I've heard a couple of dates. One was it was last November. Somebody said it was last March when they first signed these things. And then this totally disingenuous and just stupid reaction from, and I think even if this had been Paulson, I think I would have thought of this in the exact same way when they were saying, well, Tim Geithner, he should have known about these bonuses, this $165 million. It's like, I'm sorry. He's trying to figure out how to save trillions of dollars worth of bad debt. Why the fuck? Sorry, can I say that? Oh, yes. Why the hell would he be interested in in $165 million?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, yes, they should have been aware with it. It's kind of disingenuous, like, oh, gee, we didn't know. But I'm sorry, in the scheme of things, I want him to be working on, the plan he announced today.
Which made the Dow rally 500 points.
Right, which we need. Well, we need less of that. What we need is a slow, steady movement up. I mean, happy it went up 500 points instead of going down. But it's this whole notion, and then this is the Republican criticism, and then it's like, what I loved is like, well, you know, it's taking them so long to come up with this plan, where when last fall, it's like, well, we shouldn't rush into this plan. It's just like, you know, they can't win.
Yeah, well, they've been saying that Obama's moving too fast on everything, and now all of a sudden it's not fast enough. So, I mean, you can't please them no matter what, which is a given. But this plan to buy up the toxic assets is interesting. I mean, I don't know any of the details, obviously. No, few people do. But this public-private partnership, which is sort of made in Republican heaven, really, because it's not the government stepping in and taking them over. It's, sort of a joint venture, you could say.
Right.
And that's ultimately
Sort of like TVA.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of...
Which, for people who don't know, that's the Tennessee Valley Authority.
Yeah, which that's a whole other topic, but
right.
That's what made the Dow rally today, and what they're hoping, of course, is that they can get the toxic assets, as they call them, off the balance sheets of the banks, and the banks will then have money to lend again, because if the banks don't start lending, the economy can't start moving.
Right.
It's not just about homeowners, although that's a huge chunk of it. It's also businesses can't borrow money for the things that they need to borrow money for.
Right.
And
which they do, which I think people don't know a whole lot about. On in many occasions, I think it's, I guess some small businesses do it as well, but mid-sized businesses will do is that they will borrow money for a very short period of time to like meet payroll.
Mm.
And then they know that their receivables will come in, and they will then be able to pay off the short-term loan. And it's like 30 days or 60 days. It's a very, very short, you know, time frame. And that's one of the essences, ingredients, or whatever you want to call it, for the businesses at this level, which are the majority of people are employed, even though these big companies get rid of tons of people all the time, how they operate. And to be totally honest, even some of the large companies do it that way. I mean, I know McDonald's was going to upgrade like their coffee serving stuff, and they were going to use this short term, you know, 60-day, 90-day type loan, and they couldn't get it.
Yeah.
McDonald's couldn't get it.
Yeah.
That has to tell you something.
Yeah.
And or they decided, I'm sorry, it's not that they couldn't get it, it's that they weren't going to get it at a rate that they normally would have. It was way too high, and so that's what it was. But I mean, you know, it's McDonald's.
Yeah, and that's really what this whole thing is about, is freeing up money for credit at affordable rates again. And there's some evidence that there's already starting to be a little movement. House sales are starting to move upwards a bit. Interest rates, home mortgage rates rather, are down. And all
I'm
of that
calling
is
my
good.
Guy tomorrow. Well, I'm going to find out. You know,
you might as well.
It's time.
We're stuck on our high rate until the end of the period, which is next year, because we fixed for 2 years. But oh well. But yeah, no, it's an important thing. If it works, it will probably be what pushes things in the right direction. If it doesn't work well, then that's a whole other issue. But I'm reasonably optimistic that this plan is going to work. It's just a question. I mean, even some of the Republicans have been saying nice things about it, including that that Greg guy, whatever his name is, the one who's supposed to be.
Oh, yes, but he called Obama's budget irresponsible and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, blah,
whatever.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, whatever.
like the adults in the Peanuts cartoons. I think it, and some of the stimulus package is I don't know if I mentioned, I'll mention it. I won't lead up to it. I'll just talk about it. And that is that I know this friend who is associated with one of the school districts in Maryland, county school districts, and they were going to have, and this is kind of unbelievable, 10 furlough days in their next budget year, which I guess starts like in summer, you know, or something. And that because of the stimulus money, they aren't going to take those days.
Hmm.
So that's 2 weeks where they're getting their salary. So there's a direct, you know. Yeah.
And that has a flow-on effect.
Yes, it does. So I am sort of optimistic. And I read a little bit about the plan. I understood about, you know, every third word of and the. I knew what those meant. And I sort of understand it. It is what I love is like, oh, and it's extremely complicated. Well, the problem is extremely complicated. How else could it not be complicated? It was just like, yeah, okay, well, what did you expect it to be? Yeah. You know, granted, the American History Museum is open, so we do have access to the ruby slippers if we found the wand. never mind. But it's like, I couldn't believe that. And I read it in a couple places. Oh, it's really complicated. And I'm thinking like, yeah, that's why it took so long. If it wasn't complicated, even George Bush's administration could have solved it. But bump. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, with any luck, we're going to be able to start talking about some other things in future episodes instead of always having to talk about the economy.
We're going to be talking about the economy for a while.
Yeah, but we are planning on having guests join us. We are planning on talking about issues, not necessarily specific, as specific as this, But we'll see how things go. We're still sort of trying to find our feet with this old podcast thing. And as longtime listeners may recall, we were always planning on having a, I think we told them this, maybe we didn't, we're planning on recording basically every 2 weeks. And so now we are on that schedule, and hopefully we will be able to stick to it. This is always an issue.
Because we're really good at sticking with schedules, right, yeah. Art? Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Yes, well, so far I'm doing really good this week. But we shall see.
That's like two whole days, right?
So far.
Okay.
Well, counting this, it's three. So, yeah, so the next episode of Too Political will be in 2 weeks. The next scheduled episode of Too Political will be in 2 weeks. Hopefully it actually will be. We shall see.
And we reserve the right to interject additional episodes when,
that's right.
when it came. I thought we would do one on AIG last week. I suggested it, and then I changed my mind because I thought we need to have calmer heads prevail.
Yeah, we probably just would have been screaming like with the pitchfork brigades.
String them up.
Exactly. Well, before we wrap up, why don't you tell people where they can find you?
Where they can find me? Am I supposed to be found someplace? Ah, yes, I am. You can find my incredibly fascinating and interesting blog at jasonsviewfromdc.blogspot.com. Hopefully in a very short time, I will be posting pictures of the cherry blossom and the warm weather that I'm praying for finally arrives in Washington, D.C., because I really want spring to come here. I have to say I'm sort of tired of getting up in the morning and going out and having it be 32 degrees. It is now towards the last half of March. Anyway, yes. That's my little diatribe on the weather.
Well,
and where can we find you, Arthur?
Well, thank you. My personal journal podcast is called Amryn's Podcast, which is at amryn'spodcast.com. I also have a blog, which is linked there, amryn's.blogspot.com. There's this recurring theme of this Amryn's thing going on.
Yes.
My brand. But a special shout out to Daniel Brew of Callbox 7, who played our promo on his most recent episode of Callbox 7. Thank
Yay.
You for that. We've had a few downloads as a result of that. And of course, you can find our show notes and increasingly more and more about the podcast, increasingly meaning when I get around to it, at twopolitical.com. That's the number twopolitical.com. And you can send an email to Jason at twopolitical.com. Or you can send an email to me, Arthur, A-R-T-H-U-R, at twopolitical.com. And you can ring our brand new comment line on 206.
Oh, comment line. Oh, sorry.
206-426-0527.
I just might call it and see if it works.
Well, actually, you're going to call and put the voice message on it because it's cheaper for you to call than it is for me. So it's that new. It's so new. Oh. We don't yet have a message.
I see. If you act right now. No, that's something else,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Operators are waiting. Oh, no, they're not. It's all automated.
Well, they don't know that.
No, they don't. But that is it for this episode. We'll be back in about 2 weeks. And I was going to say, we'll see you. We won't see anybody. We'll talk to you then.
Well, technically, that's not even correct either.
Well, sort of.
Say goodnight, Arthur.
Goodnight.
Say goodnight, Arthur.
Good night, Arthur.
And goodbye from Washington, D.C.
And Auckland, New Zealand. Bye.
Bye.